If you're like most professionals I know, you've built a successful career, but you're still wondering if you're making the smartest moves with your money. That's where Mezy comes in. It's the AI-powered platform for tax strategies, investment insights, and clear action steps. No confusing reports, just answers, without spending thousands a year. Thousands of tech professionals, doctors, and other higher earners are using Mezy to manage serious wealth. Go to Mezy.com and see what modern wealth building looks like. That's M-E-Z-Z-I.
Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to InfertileAF, the podcast. This is episode 354, called Liliana Vasquez's keynote at Fertility Rally Live. This episode is brought to you by Fertile. Hey friends, it's Allie. If you're in the middle of your what else can we try family building era, listen up. Fertile is the first and only sterile, FDA-cleared at-home insemination kit designed for intracervical insemination, so sperm is placed right at the cervical opening. It's engineered to mimic the precision of an IUI, just 1 inch lower, but without washed sperm, meds, or appointments. Fertile is also triple patented, made in the US with IVF-grade materials, and clinically validated. The kit comes with 3 sterile attempts, so you can cover your 3 most fertile days each cycle. It's as easy to use as a tampon, it ships discreetly, and it's HSA, FSA eligible. So who is Fertile for? Folks with unexplained infertility, LGBTQIA+ families, solo parents by choice, or anyone delaying IUI or IVF because of cost or burnout. If you want an option that's private, empowering, and science-backed, this is your sign. Okay, so here's what to do. Go to Fertile.com today and use code InfertileAF for $10 off. That's Fertile, pronounced Fertile, but spelled with a PhD out of spite. They told Dr. Jen she wouldn't be a mother, and she used her PhD to prove them wrong. Again, that's Fertile.com and use code InfertileAF. Thanks, Fertile. All right, friends. So today we have a really special episode. Again, I'm going to share one of our most powerful moments from a past Fertility Rally Live in celebration of Rally Live, which is happening today, Friday, the 14th. And if you don't have your ticket yet, you can still grab it now. Our link is in the bio at InfertileAF Stories on Instagram and at Fertility Rally on Instagram. And even if you can't watch live today, you can still snag your ticket and you have 30 days to watch everything. So this episode is from the amazing Liliana Vasquez. You may know her as an Emmy-winning host, style expert, and journalist from E! News and Access Hollywood. She's also an infertility warrior. So she's going to share her whole story, which is inspiring and fierce and vulnerable and deeply moving. She's also going to remind us that representation matters, that everyone's stories matter, and that every single path to parenthood is worthy of celebration. So this talk was really unforgettable. Without further ado, this is Liliana on InfertileAF.
Everybody, and welcome to Fertility Rally. We are doing our keynote with the amazing Liliana Vasquez, who I adore. I met her when she was on my podcast, InfertileAF, earlier this year. She's a beloved television host. She's a style expert. She's the founder of the LV Guide, and she's an infertility warrior. So today she's going to tell us about the 6 years that she spent battling infertility. So Liliana, hello.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. And thank you to everyone that's joining in this rally. It's so important because I always feel like community is at the core of how you succeed and really survive IVF. So thank you for bringing so many incredible women together to share their stories.
Well, thank you for being here. I would love to hear, just kind of starting from the beginning, tell us what happened when you and your husband started to try to have babies and it wasn't.
Sure. Well, you know, I think my situation is really unique in that we weren't even trying. I was one of those women who at 35 years old really prioritize just career and friendships and adventure and travel and my husband. And, you know, we obviously knew that eventually we would want a family, but I certainly wasn't ready to try at 35. And when I say that, it's so funny looking back on it, because I still think of 35 as so young. I'm 42 now. And many of my friends at 35 were already pregnant or had already had a baby. And certainly my high school friends that I grew up with in Texas. So even though I was kind of on like the later side of thinking about starting a family, I still wasn't even ready at 35. But what kind of really got me started on this journey was a test that I didn't even ask for. My gynecologist said to me, listen, I know you're super career minded and oriented, and I know that you guys aren't really thinking about having kids yet, but you know, can I just like run the series of tests and on you? And I said, yeah, of course. Why not? I'm always somebody who wants to be in full control and have a lot of awareness around my health, whether that's women's health, mental health. And so she ran a test. And one of those tests that she ran was an AMH test, which anybody that's been through IVF knows those three words can either be amazing or terrifying. And it stands for anti-Müllerian hormone, which I learned very quickly is a way and a window into not necessarily your egg quality, but your egg quantity. And at 35, I had never thought about egg quality, egg quantity. I never thought about eggs, to be totally honest with you. I knew nothing about eggs. I knew I ovulated. I knew one went away every month, but I thought I had an infinite supply and that when I needed my one magical egg, that egg would appear and it would become a baby. Well, obviously, anybody that's gone through IVF knows that it is not that simple. And my AMH test came back and it was almost undetectable. The level was so low. And my doctor said to me, listen, if you even think that you want to have a baby by, you know, with your husband, I would suggest that you speak to an IVF specialist. And that started a 6-year long journey to conceive. And in those 6 years, we went through every specialist. We crossed the country. We flew to Denver. We saw everyone in New York. I went to a million like holistic doctors, acupuncturists, psychics. I saw everyone on this journey of trying to conceive. And we had multiple failed retrievals, failed cycles, failed IUIs. And all in all, it really took until COVID kind of shut down the entire world and finally made me sit still to get into a place where I realized how important it was for me to have a baby and how all of this stuff around it had been me really not kind of committing to what it is that I knew in my heart I wanted, because I didn't feel like I really deserved it. I had all this guilt around it. And finally, in November of 2020, we transferred an embryo. And in July of 2021, I had my son, Santiago.
Okay. So one thing you mentioned that I really want to touch on is the guilt and the career building too. Because I think as women, we have a really hard time figuring out when's the right time to do this? When's the right time to take a step back from your, you know, your career? And you've got such a high profile career, and I'm sure it's super competitive and you're on camera and you have to look a certain way and you have to be available to go here and there. So tell me about how career played into you maybe putting family building a little bit on the back burner and how you kind of dealt with that and how people watching might help like balance themselves and realize that like you, not like you can have it all, but yeah, you know, we can do this as women.
Yeah. I mean, I think the word that you said that really like always strikes a chord with me is the word available or accessible. I was only available and accessible to my job for a very long time. And, you know, it's a little bit of like nature versus nurture in there. You know, I happen to work in an industry that is incredibly competitive. I think we all do to some degree, right? Doesn't matter if you're working in television or you're working at an accounting firm or you're a teacher, you know, by nature, we are competitive, right? We want to do our best. We strive to succeed. And I'm also first generation. I'm one of the first people in my family to ever go to college, to ever have a professional career and not just a job. And so I felt this immense pressure to be successful. And what had been modeled for me as success was like, roll up your sleeves, put your head down, and get to work. And that means that you live to work. Everything that you do is for that job, to advance, to succeed, to make money, to earn, to be regarded by your peers and your community as somebody who is successful. And so I was living in that myth, which is ultimately what it is, for so long. And, you know, I actually was really happy. And I always say this, you know, I wasn't miserable doing what I love to do. I get to work in an industry that is creative and ever evolving and changing. And I got to travel and go to incredible places and interview amazing people that have been like a core foundation to who I eventually want to grow up to be, because I still think I'm like growing up. And so I don't want to like diminish any of that and that experience, but I was really, really only living to work. And so the idea of having to pause, right, while you're going through IVF was in direct conflict with everything that I had been taught and everything that I had been living. And it was like, Liliana, like, you do have to give your body a break. You do have to get, and I believe this very truly, because this is how it happened for me. Like, I had to surrender to this process in order for it to succeed for me. And what that meant is that I had to prioritize family and what it meant to be me, to be a mother, because I wasn't doing any of that. I remember having a transfer on a Monday and getting on a plane for a trip to LA same day, meaning I was traveling from New York to LA and then back to New York on a Wednesday. And now that I look back on it, I'm thinking, well, what was I even thinking? And I didn't even have enough time to think. I just knew that I was doing my transfer on a Monday. I had Tuesday to recuperate, and Wednesday I had to be back at work. Now, my boss didn't put those demands on me. I put those demands on myself. And I think for so long, I really fought with the guilt of, okay, if I stop, what does it mean? Am I going to lose my place in this career that I've worked so hard for? Is somebody going to come in and snatch the next opportunity away? So you also have to have this abundance mindset, which is what is mine is mine. It's not for anyone else to come and take from you. And I wasn't coming from abundance when I was going through IVF. I was coming from scarcity, thinking, okay, if I stop for longer than 48 hours, they will assign the story to another reporter or another correspondent, and I will never get to do this again. It's actually not how it works. So this idea of surrendering and coming from abundance are two of the biggest lessons that I learned throughout my journey. And they're not just lessons that I needed to learn to be successful in the IVF process. They're lessons that I needed to learn to be successful as a whole human being and ultimately as a mother. So IVF has taught me so much. And I don't even think that I could be 1/100th of the woman and mother that I am today if I hadn't gone through my journey, which is why looking back on it, I don't want to relive it and I wouldn't want it for anybody else, but it is what I needed. It's the universe gave me what I needed at that time.
I love that. I want to talk about more lessons and things that you learned a little bit later on. But before we get into all that, can you tell me, one of the things you said to me before when we were talking was that IVF is a thief. And I thought that was such a great way to put it. And everybody watching who's been through it probably can agree with you. What did you mean by that?
Oh my God. I mean, what doesn't IVF take from you? Like, you know, if you flip the question, you're like, well, what does it give to you? And you're like, nothing I really want unless it works, right? Unless there's one very specific outcome, what does it give you when you're going through it? You know, hindsight is 20/20. So now I can look back on it with very different eyes. But in the moment, I mean, it robbed me of everything. It robbed me of, you know, really important relationships with friends because I chose to keep my fertility battle private. I was riddled with shame and a lot of grief. And I didn't grow up really understanding how powerful vulnerability can be. So I always saw the idea of oversharing or sharing too much about your personal life as a weakness. And so it robbed me of really close relationships that I had built over my 30 years. And then all of a sudden I pulled away from these people because I couldn't let them in because I couldn't let them into what I was really going through, right? It robbed me of like eating my favorite foods. It robbed me of vacations. It robbed me of like day-to-day joy. You know, it robbed me of feeling joy for other people because friends were getting pregnant, coworkers were getting pregnant. And while I wanted to celebrate them and I did, it hurt so bad every time I thought about it. So I would put distance between me and everyone else that was going through what is ultimately one of life's greatest miracles. You know, it robbed me of a lot of time with my husband. You know, that was, you know, there's people that go through IVF and they come out on the other side and they're like, oh God, like it made our relationship so much stronger and so much better. Well, it didn't do that for my relationship. And I share that very publicly because I think there's a lot of comparison going on with, you know, things that you see on Instagram and things that you read on blogs and boards. But, you know, ultimately a relationship is between two people and you never really know the day to day. And there's all of these, you know, I used to watch all of these videos where the husband was like meal prepping, you know, fertility meal prepping for the wife. And I was like, my husband doesn't do that for me. And, you know, going through IVF did not make our relationship stronger. It actually tore us apart. And it's okay that that happened because we are still together and we have a baby now and we're a family and we got through it. And ultimately, like surviving that has made us stronger, but going through that process didn't. So it just, it's really like, what did it not take away from me? It took away everything. It took away the simplicity of living life without a schedule, right? Getting to wake up on a Saturday morning and choosing to go to Pilates class instead of having to go get a blood draw and then be sad all day because you just wait for the levels to come back and then they tell you that you're not actually ready to move forward with your transfer. So it is, it's the ultimate thief. It really is.
Yes. One of the things we bonded on before is what you just talked about was you said it almost broke your marriage. And I've been very vocal about that with my relationship too. My husband and I were at an impasse. He wanted to not do it. I wanted to keep moving forward. We were like, I thought we were going to get divorced. And thankfully we are still together many years later. But you know, I'm glad that you're open about that. And that's why I am as well. Cause I want people to see, you know, Instagram versus reality, right? Like, he never meal prepped for me. He did one shot and it was only because I couldn't reach, you know?
Yeah, literally. I think my husband did like one shot during IVF. He did every shot of the progesterone and oil once I got pregnant, but he did one shot and I did IVF for 6 years. Okay. Yeah. One shot in six years.
But tell me a little bit on that note about relationship and kind of repair. Like, how did you guys recover from this trauma that you guys went through? Because it is trauma, I believe.
It's absolute trauma. And it just piles on, right? And added to all of the other trauma that you're going through, all the trauma of loss every time, you know, you have a failed transfer or you lose an embryo. I mean, it's loss on top of loss on top of loss. And I've been very vocal about how important it has been for me to seek out maternal mental wellness specialists. So a therapist, a psychiatrist, a counselor, a peer group, because it's part of the healing that I've had to do over the last, I want to say 20 months for me. I started in my second trimester. And when I was in my second trimester, I felt so conflicted because the world had sold me this idea of what pregnancy should look like and feel like. And I looked the part, but I wasn't feeling the part. I was like riddled with grief and sadness. And it's because I had finally allowed all of the loss and the trauma of the last 6 years to kind of now like bubble up and I couldn't hold it together anymore, right? I just was a different person. I was now carrying a life. I was carrying my baby. And so I had another amazing doctor, which is why your physicians can't just be your physicians. They have to be your partners in this journey. And my OBGYN, who's an incredible high-risk OB here in LA, said to me, listen, what you're feeling is absolutely normal, and I need to start with that. But I also think that it would be important for you to talk to somebody. You never talked to somebody while you were going through IVF. Now, I had a therapist while I was going through IVF, but it was more focused on like relationship and career stuff, not this. And so she recommended a maternal mental health specialist. And I started seeing her in my second trimester. And that is when the healing started. And the healing wasn't about just how I was feeling in my pregnancy. It was how I was feeling about my husband and all of the resentment that I had built up over the last 6 years about what I considered him not really being my partner through all of this. Like, sure, I get that you want to be a parent, but I needed you to be my partner first. I needed you to show me that you were in this. And even though you physically don't carry the burden of this, I needed you to support me. And I didn't feel like he had. And so working through the layers of all of that started really in therapy in my second trimester. And I just saw my therapist this morning and we're still talking about that stuff. So for me, focusing on mental health and understanding that it's a critical part of healing has been really essential in my recovery and my learning and being able to move on from this and heal the relationship that we've had. And we're still in a healing phase. You know, we we have a baby. We just finished, like, he just turned 14 months. So I'm like, okay, now we're in a different phase. We got through the newborn phase. We got through the infant phase, but now it's a whole new world. So for me, committing to my own mental health and having like real comfort in saying that and acknowledging that is part of why I do these podcasts and these conversations, because I think as much time as you spend researching like what your AMH is and your FSH and the diets and the specialists you should see, you should also think about talking to somebody while you're going through all of this, right? And I don't mean your mom. I don't mean your best friend. I don't mean your friend that has gone through IVF. I mean, somebody who can really guide you through this and give you coping mechanisms for what you're going through.
That's so awesome. And can you give us a couple of more like quick tips about self-care and mental health self-care that you picked up along the way as you were going through this?
Yeah.
If you're like most professionals I know, you've built a successful career, but you're still wondering if you're making the smartest moves with your money. That's where Mezzi comes in. It's the AI-powered platform for tax strategies, investment insights, and clear action steps. No confusing reports, just answers, without spending thousands a year. Thousands of tech professionals, doctors, and other higher earners are using Mezzi to manage serious wealth. Go to Mezzi.com and see what modern wealth building looks like. That's Mezzi.com.
Talking with therapists obviously is amazing, and I'm a huge fan of that as well. But what other like little things were you doing, or are you doing now, even after the fact?
Yeah. So I prioritize time for myself. And I wasn't really doing that while I was going through IVF. I felt like I was just go, go, go. If I wasn't in the constant go, go, go of IVF, I was in the constant go, go, go of career. And in that, you start to kind of lose the things that make you uniquely you. And I lost sight of who that person was. And so one of the things that I started doing, one was for me, was going back to physical fitness and just moving my body. I was a dancer in college. I was a cheerleader in college. Movement has always been at the core of who I am. And I just stopped doing it. I was always like too tired, or I was nervous that, you know, I would like shake my, like, you know, if I was going through like a cycle, I'd be like, well, I can't move that much. It's uncomfortable. And so finding my way back to movement has been something that was really, really important to me. And even if it's only, you know, a 10-minute walk or like a 30-minute, like, you know, guided yoga session on my phone, whatever it is, it's just time for me that is selfish and self-indulgent. And that is okay. Like, it is okay to prioritize yourself. So that for me, another thing that was really important was I am a creative person. And even if you're not like an arts and crafts person or an artist, something about creation is really freeing for me. And so in high school, I had studied ceramics, and I hadn't thrown on a pottery wheel since I was 18 years old. But I remember the feeling of that. And I remember always like feeling so in control when I was in that. And I was searching for control, because we all know IVF is not really ultimately up to you. There is zero control. And for someone that's a control freak, it's the hardest thing to go through. And so I went back to that. So I really went back to the things that I felt at the core used to bring me a lot of joy, or for me, it was control, right? And not in a bad way, control. Sometimes when you hear the word control, it's like, oh, that's not a good thing. No, it was feeling in control of the moment, feeling in control of this little piece of clay that I could mold into whatever it is I wanted. And then I could change my mind and start over. There was something about being able to dictate the outcome of like literally this piece of clay. And so going back to the things that bring you joy and that make you feel like yourself, even if it's something that you did when you were 14 years old, think back to that, because we start to lose a lot of that, because that's ultimately why BF is, right? You lose yourself in return to hopefully reemerge as somebody else, which is a mom. And so I think going back to those things that make me feel like Liliana were really core and me feeling whole again.
Yeah. A friend of mine always says, what lights you up? And I think that's such a good thing to keep in mind. You know, you have to kind of try to remember that when you've got the blinders on and you're feeling sad and you're feeling.
And sometimes what lights me up is like an hour of Vanderpump Rules with a glass of wine uninterrupted. Totally.
Oh my God. Can we do like a
view? Yes. You know, like, so it's like sometimes it can be a pottery class, and sometimes it really is an hour of, or it's an hour of Gossip Girl, an episode that I've watched 27 times. You know, it's just that time where it's about you and only you, where you're not a caretaker for your husband, for your house, for your friends, for your family, like just nurturing and taking care of you.
Right. One other thing that you're really, I know that you find like hold dear to your heart and I think is great and you always speak out about is being your own advocate when it comes to health. So tell me what you did and what you learned about being your own advocate and how somebody watching might be able to start to do that a little bit more as well.
Oh yeah, totally. So I think I said it earlier, you know, you can't pick physicians who are just physicians. You need to pick physicians who are your partners. And that means that, you know, obviously they are doctors and they are experts in their field, but nobody is a better expert than you about your body and what you're going through. And so when I would speak to physicians, especially when I was going through IVF doctors and I was kind of moving around from different, you know, hospitals, you know, I would say to them, you know, talk to me a little bit about a situation where like the protocol that you've done that has yielded, you know, the best results for 90% of your patients doesn't work. What are you going to do then, right? How individual is this plan and how much are you and I going to communicate? Not you, not the nurses and I, but you and I as my physician, how are you and I going to communicate? And what is the system that we can put in place so that we're talking? Is it email? Is it text? Is it a web portal? Is it a medical portal? And don't be afraid to ask them questions. I think so often, and especially because I'm first generation, I'm half Mexican, half Puerto Rican, you know, I always saw my parents kind of default to physicians as like, oh, no, don't ask them questions. Like you walk into the office, they tell you what to do. And I'm like, they don't know you. They see you twice a year max. They don't know about you. So really being able to ask tough questions saying, you know, on average, how much time do you spend with me in my appointments going forward, right? Like, do you come in for 10 minutes? Do you set aside 30 minutes? Like how many patients do you see in a day? All of these questions are very valid questions. Just like if you were in a hiring position at work and you were hiring somebody, you are making a choice to work with a physician. It's not the be all end all. And by the way, whoever is the best in your town or the best in your state does not mean that they are going to be the best for you. You're just looking at a total of averages. And it just so happens that their average is higher than the physician next door. But I always say, like, interview a couple of people. Like, you shouldn't go to the first person that is like the best or who worked for your friend because you might have different personalities. And so if you are meeting with a physician and they're not open to answering your questions in that first appointment, to me, that's a big red flag. And you're going to have way more questions in appointment 10 after 3 failed cycles than you are in appointment 1. And you want someone who is open to answering all those questions and also problem solving. Doctors are not, I mean, I'm a really religious and faithful person. So doctors aren't God. Like we have to problem solve. They don't have magic solutions. They don't have a magic egg. They don't have a magic embryo. And so problem solving is part of their job. And so how are we going to problem solve together? You know, so I feel like that is how you pick a physician that's not a physician. It's your physician and your partner in this journey. And it's really important to make sure that you're picking the right person. So ask them any question. And the more open they are, the better. By the way, I did that with my OBGYN as well. Like I'm somebody that wanted to have an elective C-section. And I asked her about that. What's that process been like for your other patients? Is this something that you've ever done? And by the way, like I picked the best doctor I could have ever dreamed of. Like we still talk, like she's, and this is what happens. You develop a relationship with these people and they're part of your life for what is like the most important time until like you become a mom and have a baby. And then it's your pediatrician, which by the way, applies to your pediatrician as well. But don't be afraid to ask hard questions. If you don't ask them, no one else is going to advocate for you.
Right. We always say they're working for you. You know, yes. And having a team, you know, if somebody's watching it right now and isn't getting the medical care or working, mm-hmm. feeling like they're working as a team, like I think you and I would both agree, it doesn't have to be like that, right?
No.
Like, find somebody that really will take interest in your case and not treat you like just a number and, you know, answer your questions and not think they're stupid. And, you know, as women, I think we're often taught, you know, like don't rock the boat, you know, don't ask totally. Questions.
No, it's the old thing. It's don't take up space. Like don't walk into a room and take up any space. Don't take up their time. Don't take up their space. Don't take up their energy. Well, no, I mean, if you're paying for this out of pocket, or even if your insurance is covering this, I mean, this is one of the most expensive things I've ever done, probably for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of money that we spent on this. So like, if I'm spending this kind of money, like I want the attention that I deserve, right? And, you know, I always say like, if you feel like you're in a bad doctor-patient relationship or it doesn't feel right, then communicate that it doesn't feel right and say, this is what doesn't feel right about this relationship. How are we going to fix this? And then that's going to be your telling point. If that doctor's like, well, I'm doing everything I can and this is the protocol. Okay, well, at least you tried to fix it, right? Then you at least can say, okay, I'm going to walk away from this knowing that I tried to resolve and tried to advocate for myself. You know, don't just like scrap them because you're like, ah, it's not working. I would say like, try to fix the problem because maybe you haven't given them a chance. You know,
mm-hmm. One other thing you touched on that I think is really interesting about your story, and I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about it, is, you know, growing up in a Latin community, you've mentioned that this isn't talked about. Fertility and infertility traditionally isn't talked about a lot. Can you tell us about your experience with that and how you kind of came to terms and were able to kind of talk about it? And, you know, you said also the power of vulnerability. How did that come into play as well?
Yeah, well, I think in communities of color, sex just isn't talked about as often as it should be. There's all this stigma and, you know, with women, it starts, I remember when I got my period, like I didn't want to tell my mom, you know, and there's all this stigma around all of these, you know, reproductive issues as young women growing up. I grew up in a Mexican Puerto Rican household that kind of creates the sense of shame around our bodies and around what we're going through. And I carried that with me into infertility because everyone around me, whether it was my cousins or a second cousin or someone that lived seemingly got pregnant very easily. And there's also these really dangerous stereotypes that exist, at least in the Latinx community. And, you know, when I talk to my Black friends, they say the same thing. They're like, oh, it's the same thing. You know, I was talking to a girlfriend yesterday. She's Jamaican. And she said, I would never even dream of sharing, you know, at the time what I was going through with my sisters and my aunts. And I felt the same way. I was embarrassed and I was really ashamed because it isn't something that we talked about. And miscarriage, by the way, isn't something that we talked about. And when one of my cousins did miscarry, everyone was so hush hush about it. And I remember seeing that happen to her and thinking, why are you guys like shaming her into silence? Right. But I saw that and I thought, wait, how are they going to respond to me going through IVF and ultimately like transferring embryos? And then also religion plays a key role. I remember seeing my grandmother watching a story on the evening news in Spanish about IVF and saying, who are these doctors to play God? And basically saying that like people shouldn't be doing that. And that is like a visceral memory that like I felt in all of my pores. And I remember my grandmother passed away before I had really kind of like gotten deep into IVF, but that went through my head every time I would see my, I'm like, what is my grandmother going to think if I do get pregnant? Is she going to love this baby? Like, is she going to question? And so there's a ton of stigma and shame that exist in communities of color. And it makes it really hard to talk about with those that are closest to us. My family's everything to me, but here I was keeping this huge secret from them because I didn't know how they would treat me. I didn't know how they would respond. And not only are we keeping it from our families, but oftentimes in communities of colors, we're not even going out and seeking treatment for infertility. You know, when you look at the statistics, white women are twice as likely as Black or Latina women to actually go out and seek assisted reproductive technology. They just don't do it because there's not a lot of access. There's not a lot of education. And then there is this stigma that exists in our communities. So that's incredibly sad because we know that infertility doesn't discriminate, right? It affects women of all ages, all colors, all sizes, all races, all religion. Like infertility doesn't care. And so when I think about that, I think about how painful that is for somebody going through this and how hard it was for me to go through this as a Latina because I did keep it from my family. The only person I told was my mom. And it took me a lot to really finally open up to my mom and tell her about this because I didn't want to be judged. And, you know, my mom was wonderful when I told her, but she was also very honest. And she said to me, I don't understand what you're doing. I don't understand how it works. I'm willing to listen and I'm willing to learn, but like, I can't be this source of support for you because I don't get it, Liliana. Mm-hmm. And when she said that to me, I said, don't worry. Like, I'm going to make sure that you feel educated. And in that research, I realized it's almost impossible because so much of this literature doesn't exist in Spanish, right? It's changing now. But in 2006, when my mom was ready to learn, it was really hard. It was hard to find a doctor that I could send her to answer her questions. So it's really hard when there's a language barrier, there's an education barrier, and there's an accessibility barrier. And that often happens in IVF because it is a privilege and it's incredibly expensive. And so many of us don't have insurance that covers it. So we don't have access to these services.
Absolutely. That's what I was going to add was the money.
The money. It's real. This is a, you know, we sometimes I think we get away from talking about the fact that this is a business and this is a very profitable business. And that means that like it's going to stay as a profitable business as long as it can. And so it's our job as IVF warriors to go out and fight for this and fight for insurance to cover this and go lobby our states to cover this and lobby our HR departments to say, if you have 62% women in your workforce, why are you not covering this as a treatment, but you're going to cover something else? Like, it's our job to make this more equitable for all of the women that can't access this.
I love that so much. Thank you for saying that. Fun question. What's the craziest thing that happened to you on your, throughout this whole 6-year journey?
The funniest, is that what you said?
Yeah. Or craziest, or just like when you look back, you're like, I can't believe that happened. Or I can't believe I did that.
I mean, there's so many things that I did. I mean, I remember, like, I am a fashion girl. I love fashion. I love style. I've built my career as a style expert. And I remember trying to convince my girlfriends that Birkenstocks and socks were like a thing. And that's because I lived by the rule that my feet had to be covered at all times because it was part of like implantation. And they're like, no, girl, that doesn't work. I'm like, no, it's really cool. I promise. Like, everyone's doing this. This is a trend. Like, look how chic I look with my Birkenstocks and socks. And they're like, yeah, you might be a style expert, but I'm going to fight you on this one. And it's because like I literally wore socks for like 2 weeks straight. Like, I was like, no, I have to wear socks the whole time. So I remember thinking like, I'm not going to sell this to anyone. And then also just like the craziness of my schedule. Like, how did I think that I could get on a plane 24 hours after and like go it was John Legend. I got on the plane for John Legend, which like, listen, I mean, if I'm going to get on a plane for somebody, John Legend's a pretty good person to get on a plane for, but like, what was I thinking? I had just spent, you know, like $26,000 on a cycle of IVF. I had less than 24 hours and like started and then like lifting suit. I don't know what I was thinking. I actually wasn't. I was just an autopilot. I really was. And yeah, like looking back on it, it's insanity, but yeah, I survived it and I'm on the other side and I'm so grateful. And, you know, I look back, it's like what I said, I look back on it and I'm like, you know, it taught me the lessons that I needed to learn, not just for IVF, but just to be, you know, a real whole human at 42. It took me a long time to get here. But it taught me the lessons that I needed to learn to be a whole real human and to be a mom, you know, right, to be a mother.
Before we wrap, first of all, I love talking to you. You're so amazing. That's why you're so good at your job, obviously.
Thank you.
Give us just a few quick things that you wish you knew then that you do know now about this whole infertility world. Just a couple quick ones.
Sure. That everything that you're feeling is absolutely normal because there is no normal way to experience this. There is no right way or wrong way to go through it. And then, you know, I think for me, don't keep this to yourself. Like, this community of women and this community that you've rallied here today is one of the most bountiful and resourceful places that you can ever dream of having entree into. And I know all of us got here in a way that we probably wouldn't have naturally chosen, right? Like, we didn't choose to go through this, but use this community and let go of the shame and the stigma and the guilt. You know, for me, it was like, wow, am I going through infertility because I prioritized my career for so long? And is this punishment for choosing work over family? Let go of all of that. Like, IVF doesn't have those qualifiers on it. Like, being part of this community, like, infertility doesn't qualify that way. And, you know, just let that go and lean into this community. I mean, it's an incredible resource. I mean, sometimes I would lean into, like, you know, anonymous chat boards because I had a lot of questions that my doctor wasn't giving me the right answers for. And just having somebody be able to hear you and understand you meant so much to me. So I wish that I had discovered that sooner. You know, a lot of my friends didn't even know what I went through until I shared that I was pregnant. And if I could change one thing about what I experienced, it would have been to be a lot more vocal about my journey and let people into the process so much earlier. I waited too long. It's one of my biggest regrets because I felt so alone for so long. And there was no need for it because this beautiful community exists.
right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed Liliana Vasquez, her incredible keynote from a past Fertility Rally Live. We have done 10 of these now, and it has just been so cool to hear from so many different people, so many different stories, and have all these attendees come and watch their talks. I also want to remind you guys that my new board book is out. It's called You Are a Work of Art, and it is so different from the other two books because it's a board book. So it's for all kids who are born through ART. It's super cute. I have my same illustrator, and you can find it on my website at infertileafgroup.com. Also, as always, check out Fertility Rally if you need a safe place to land. You can find our website at fertilityrally.com, and we're on Instagram at Fertility Rally. So make sure to follow me at InfertileAF Stories on IG for all the latest updates on all the above, the books, the events, IRL events, virtual events, all the things. So thank you guys so much for listening today. I will talk to you soon.
If you're like most professionals I know, you've built a successful career, but you're still wondering if you're making the smartest moves with your money. That's where Mezy comes in. It's the AI-powered platform for tax strategies, investment insights, and clear action steps. No confusing reports, just answers, without spending thousands a year. Thousands of tech professionals, doctors, and other higher earners are using Mezy to manage serious wealth. Go to Mezy.com and see what modern wealth building looks like. That's M-E-Z-Z-I.com.